Welcome to the interview. This is the interview about the movie Occupants. And I have on the phone Russell Emmanuel and Vasilis. This is played on NEO Community Radio. This is an awesome movie. At least I've seen the trailer, and I cannot wait to see the movie. And you're just finishing up production of it now. Is that correct, Russell?
Yes, that's correct. First, thank you for having myself and Vasilis on the show. We really do appreciate it.
No problem.
And we're going to be debuting the film for cast and crew on December 14th. So that's our quote-unquote hard deadline. So right now we're finishing up post-production. We're still doing some sound design work, and we're doing color correction on the film. And that's the final elements that are necessary to finish the film. We have Vasilis, the composer, here, and his 45 minutes of music in the film has been done for, I think, like 2 months now. So music-wise, we're done.
Wow, that's really amazing. The whole process fascinates me. I've never been involved in making a movie. Maybe in the future I will, but... when I was a kid, I was really very interested, obviously, in movies and how they made them. Russell, were you in the music world, you know, growing up in one way or another?
Well, I'll tell you this. I became a filmmaker because of the music of John Williams. John Williams is a composer of films like Star Wars and mm-hmm. the Richard Donner Superman. And I was just very enamored with film music. I like thematic development. When you have like leitmotifs and themes for certain characters.
So tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, like when I was working with Vasilis here, I specified to him that I want certain themes for characters. So we have our main character, Annie Curtis, and she has a theme. There's like a love theme. There's a suspense theme. And what else do we have, Vasilis?
We have some themes for the commander.
So, you know, we played with different elements like that, and I'm very particular about that. And by the end credit, well, basically, in the film, you have, like, I guess, an arc, the story arc. Well, I think of the music, the composer, the same way. You have a beginning, middle, and end. And you have a, I guess, character development with the music itself. So when we started the film, it was very sparse in music because it's a found footage film. But as the film progresses, the music starts to come in more and more and more. And by the time you get to the end credits, it's a rousing rendition, like an in-conclusion piece.
Anything I add, the difficulty was to increase this tension that the film has. And adding the elements, the themes, not from the beginning, but little by little. So that was the challenge. That, every character has his own or her own theme, but also the character has a different kind of moods and situations that are facing them. The music had to represent these kind of changes in their moods. And that was the challenge because, the environment, it wasn't only about the sound environment. We also wanted to create melodies, and that was a nice part of this process, right?
Well, what was it? When you begin the film, there isn't no music at all. But then you have little pieces here and there. By the end of the film, I think you remember this, Vasilis, there was 10 minutes of non-stop music.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I'm sure you hated me for that, but yeah.
I really enjoy it. Even though it was like a huge mountain in the beginning. I was scared, I have to be honest, because many things were changing during these 10 minutes. And the music had to follow this kind of thing. The emotions, the different situations that were happening. But
Well, one thing I love about Vasilis, Julie, is that he's able to take the different themes and he's able to interweave them.
Wow. More than one character in a scene?
Yeah. And that's what he's really good at, and that's why I'm very happy. What I do with every film is I do a music breakdown. So he knows at this time code, I want this theme to play, or at that time code, suspense music plays. And then I would give him a temp track, of previous music. And I say, okay, this is sort of what I kind of wanted to sound like. And then what Vasilis was able to do, and we worked, back and forth, trying to, I guess, perfect it. But yeah, he was able to interweave it, and he made the changes. He never complained. I'm very particular, and I'm very perfectionistic, but he never complained, and thank you for that, Vasilis. And he gave me exactly what I wanted.
Let's talk about the style of movie that this was done in. Can you explain that, Russell?
Well, yeah, it's the found footage genre, which is kind of like Paranormal Activity or the Blair Witch Project. It's basically about a young couple. Their name is Annie and Neil Curtis, played by Brianna White and Michael Pugliasi. And their characters set up cameras all over their house. They record footage. They're doing a 30 days of clean living documentary because she's a documentarian. So basically, found footage is after all of this is recorded on camera, then somebody in the near future finds this footage and then they cobble it together and then they present it to the audience. In this case, it's the Peterson Research Institute, headed by Dr. Peterson, played by Robert Picardo's character, Robert Picardo of Star Trek. And so his company assembles this footage, and then he shows it in a movie format. And that's what the movie is. And we as the audience have to decide what happened to these people. If you watch the trailer, it'll kind of give you insight into this. But basically, what happens is this young couple, they record this footage, but as they're recording, they start capturing a parallel version of their house and of themselves. In real life, quote-unquote real life, she's a blonde woman, and he has facial hair. Their parallel versions, she's a brunette, and he's completely clean-shaven. Now, the real versions are cheery and happy. The parallel versions are depressed, and they're very dark people. Now, of course, what happens is as the found footage film progresses is they're able to start to communicate with them, both verbally and physically. And then what happens even further in the film is it becomes very horrific. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but basically the parallel couple are not nice people. And when they find out about the real couple, then a lot of horrific incidences ensue. Very Halloween-esque.
What made you come up with using a parallel universe?
Who am I talking to?
Well, don't worry about that right now. I just want to know what made you come up with this idea.
Well, we got the script from, it was the producer, Howard Nash, and he found the script through a company called Inktip. And it was a script by a writer named Julia Camera, and she's a member of the Writers Guild of America. And when we found her script, when he found the script, he signed her on, optioned the script, and this was in February of 2014. Then I read the script, and I'm going, wow, we got to make this film. It's about what these two characters, two main actors, Annie and Neil Curtis, they're only taking place in one house interior, and it's using a lot of static, stable camera shots because it's found footage. So we can shoot with just two actors in one house interior, and we don't have to have many different types of shots, like in the traditional narrative kind of cinematic, style, which is like what you would have a close-up, medium shots, wide shots, establishing shots. You don't need any of that because it's just found footage. So we were able to shoot all of this in just 10 days because, again, it was just two main actors, one house, static footage. And it was just brilliant. I loved the script. So we got this script, I was reading it and I'm going, wow, it's about a parallel universe. And I actually started doing my own research. And I don't know if you know this, but CERN is the company in Europe, and Vasilis, you might be familiar with this. They're trying to open up a portal to a parallel universe right now. They're actually trying to do that. Now, it's not like a parallel universe like what we have in the film, but it is a quote-unquote parallel alternate world, I guess. You know, and I thought that was fascinating because that's science fact, not science fiction.
Well, this is very all disturbing. I hate to interrupt you, but this is very disturbing that you're uncovering this other world that is out there. Maybe the people on the other side want to stay there away from everything. Did you ever think about that?
Well, yes, and there are other people who might want to come to this world, and of course that can be a scary proposition.
Well, you know, for example, I think in your trailer, the characters on this side, or I should say your side, seemed all nice, like you said, and cheery, and the other side were kind of not so nice. What if in your world somebody was mean? Would they get meaner on the other side? Or would they become nice? Is it opposite or worse?
You know, it's funny you say that because right now we're actually working on a tie-in to the film itself, a graphic novel. Graphic novels are like 300 Rise of the Empire. I'm talking the actual novel itself, not the film, but Frank Miller style, very dark. And we actually explore more of this parallel world. I don't want to give it away, but we're going to introduce this at an anime convention in January 15th through 17th, called the Taiyokan. Basically, yeah, we deal with what if, you know, with this parallel world, what if certain things happened in the past where it veered towards a darker path, I guess. So in the present day, let's say instead of the United States, it's the British colonies still. And let's say the Nazi Germany still exists. And what if they're fighting each other? And what if L.A., Los Angeles, has a football team, which we don't?
What if Cleveland had a football team that actually could win? That would be a very alternative universe. Yes. We've been working on that for years. We think it's a lost cause.
Well, we'll put that in the sequel. You know, it's funny we say this, especially right around Halloween, you know, and only a couple days ago. But who knows? Exactly.
Yes, you know, this is our favorite time of year.
Well, you know what? I tell you, this film is probably going to be very popular on Halloween because it does deal with kind of supernatural elements, you could say, you know. I mean, who knows what the parallel world is like? And just what if there's more than one parallel world?
Oh, you should not tread too far into this world, Derry. You just never know what you may find. You may find that time travel is something that we use all the time. And, you know, I might have met Hitler the other day. It's just amazing over here. And maybe you should stay over in your neck of the woods. We might be happier. Which reminds me, on the set of the movie, was there anything odd that happened?
There were some odd.
I knew, I do it.
Now, Vasilis, I don't know if I told you this, but when we were shooting, a lot of the crew members and some of the cast kept thinking that there was an actual ghost in the house. Now, I need to give you a background. No, I'm being serious here. I know we're you know, we're kind of laughing here, but it actually was a little bit scary. Now, we got the house, right? Through a company called Airbnb, and it was a beautiful house. It was very picturesque. On the inside, it was completely remodeled, I guess only several years ago. Now, the house itself, though, was built in the early 1900s in the Spanish stucco style. So it's an old house. It has history, right? Okay, while we were filming, some of the crew members and cast, they would say, Russ, you know, behind a green screen, I could have sworn I saw something move. But you know what was behind the green screen? Only a bathroom. And all the windows were shut. Or sometimes, one of our crew members, her name is Jennifer Durst, great unit production manager, she'd say, I heard off. And I look behind me, and there's nobody there. So there were a lot of these incidences. Or, like, the dishwasher would suddenly just just start for some odd reason. It would just start, just washing. And I mean, of course, it could be that it was on a timer or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of these instances, and it kind of freaked us out. Now, the other thing is, because we got it through Airbnb.com, we actually owned the place for the duration of the shoot. And guess who stayed in the house for several days by himself? Moi.
Ah.
So I'm by myself in a house where everybody's seeing there's ghosts, and there's only one working bathroom because the other one got stuffed up and we had to get a portable bathroom. So there's only one working bathroom, right? And that's where people heard the cough.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm an insomniac, so it's like 2 in the morning, I would wake up, nobody's around, everything's quiet, and I would have to go into the bathroom where everybody heard the cough, and they saw things move. Now, how do you think I felt?
A little creeped out, I'll bet.
It wasn't very conducive to directing, but anyway. In retrospect, obviously, we got the shots, and everything was fine. But the fact is, the house is over 100 years old, and it does have history. So,
mm-hmm.
There you go. It could have been a haunted house.
Could be. Maybe the spirits didn't like you uncovering the whole other universe thing. Maybe they wanted to keep it secret. Now, do you actually believe that there is an alternative universe?
Hmm? Well, I will quote a character that I love, and he always says, "I want to believe." I truly believe that it's theoretically possible in the multiverse theory, they call it, which is there are an infinite number of universes. So there could be many duplicates of all three of us, and we have lived different lives. And who knows, what a parallel Russ or a parallel Julie or a parallel Latilla is doing right now. Who knows?
Maybe Donald Trump is a priest in that world. Hmm?
But I will tell you this. I mean, one thing that attracted me to the script is you have these two main characters. They're lovey-dovey. They're very happy, and they have a great life, right? But then they see a duplicate of themselves, and they're living a very crappy life, very depressed, very dark. But the fact is, they are them. They're a genetic duplicate. So they start to doubt not only each other, but also themselves. And, for a script, for actors, this is just, it's very psychological. It's very brilliant how the script, it's basically a self-doubting movie. And I was very attracted to the subject matter.
Well, I think Julie is back here. I don't know what happened, but I'm back. I don't know what was going on previously. But
I thought I heard a glitch. I heard a kind of sound.
Yeah.
Kind of like we have in our cell. I don't know. Is that.
Maybe it was one of those kind of thing.
Seriously, were we talking to a parallel version? Or?
I have no idea. But I find what you were just saying very fascinating, because what it reminds me of is Facebook. There have been a lot of people saying that what people are posting on Facebook, it's all happy, joy, joy, here we are romping in the leaves. And in reality, they're going through these terrible things, but they don't want to tell their friends about their demons and their, terrible things that are happening. They just want everything to look perfect in their perfect little world on Facebook. So maybe some people are kind of living two lives, the lives that they depict on Facebook and then what's actually really happening.
Well, you know what? I'm very fascinated with the duality of characters. It's very, if you would were to pick a superhero, it'd be Batman. Batman, he's Bruce Wayne by day, and he's the Dark Knight, at night.
Right.
There you go, night at night. But, I like duality. A majority of my films, you have that, whether it's Girl with Gun, it's about a female assassin, and she lives a double life. Same thing, she's like a female Batman. Or this film, Annie and Neil Curtis, they have a duplicate, but that duplicate is a darker version of themselves. So, I think it's very fascinating.
I do have a question for Vasilis. For movies, obviously spooky movies, you kind of already know what the tone of the score is going to be. But what do you do for other movies to kind of get a feel for the sound?
you know, as a film composer, you have to just follow the directions from the director and in general go with the flow of the movie. I mean, I compose music for a documentary. I have to go with the flow of Mitch. I compose music for Russell's movie. I have to go with the flow of terror and fear. So it's always about feelings for me. I always said this to Russell, but for me, it's not about harmonies. It's usually about the sound environment and some melody that will go with the feeling that the director wants to put in. I think we did it for this movie.
Well, at the same time, you know, we keep talking about duality here. It's about a collaboration, you know? And the fellas would sometimes say, Russ, I don't think there needs to be a music hit here. You know, why don't I try this and I'll send you an example. And then I would be like, oh, you're right. You know, I mean, I don't know everything, right? It does take, it's a collaboration, whether it's the composer or the actors or your crew, the other crew members on the film. I mean, for me, it's about, we're all family, basically, you know, and everybody has good ideas. So, yeah, that's how I worked with Phyllis. It wasn't my way or the highway. I wanted an input from him. Because he is the composer, he's the musician. I'm not, and that's how we worked on this film. And I think we worked very well. It was a really good collaboration.
Well, Vasilis, do you use orchestras then for some of the footage, or do you play a lot of instruments yourself?
Well, I'm an electric guitar player, but I didn't use electric guitar for this score. We wanted something more classical. But with some 2015 elements. So we used mostly orchestra, sound or live orchestra, but we also added some percussion that are kind of more modern. And I think that the combination was successful finally because the result sounded.
How did you find the orchestra? Had you worked with them before in other projects?
Yeah, I worked in Los Angeles actually a couple of years ago with the Los Angeles Orchestra, and it was an amazing experience. If you ask me, as my personal opinion, I always prefer to work with real musicians because you get the feeling, right?
Right.
You have the energy of the musicians. You have more flexibility when you're working on your own in your studio, and you can, delete one note that you don't like, and you can be much more precise. But sometimes this is the element that misses from scores nowadays. Even the human mistake from the recording is something that sometimes music needs, right?
Well, you found Andre Miranda and his $99 orchestra on Kickstarter.
Yes,
and
you
said, Russ, what do you think of this? You're the one who found them.
Exactly. So, you know, the offer that they're having is really attractive, let's say. They have a nice, you have a nice opportunity with the recording with an orchestra that will be efficient, with a nice quality, nice quality musicians, and, kind of cheap, to be honest. So, but the result was amazing, and Andre was a great collaborator. I suggested this to Russell, and she was, I don't think you hesitate at all. I mean,
No, because I love orchestral music.
Oh, yes.
And I know it pumps up the value of the film. I mean, the fact is, you have an orchestral score, it's just going to bring up that level, the marquee level, if you will. It'll make it that much more attractive when we try to sell the film. So I was fully aware of this. But at the same time, I grew up with film music, so I just loved it. Now, we couldn't afford it for the whole score, but what we did, with Phyllis and I, we talked about it and learned. And the way this $99 orchestra works is if you pay a certain amount of money, they will record a certain amount of score. So Phyllis and I were like, okay, so what's the best place where we can put in an orchestra? And we're thinking the end credits.
Right.
So
So guess what? That was the very first thing that he came up with, was the end credits.
Oh, so you made the film backwards.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, there was a deadline with this Kickstarter.
Deadline? That's a good word. Deadline. Yes.
Well, yes. but in this case, it really was a deadline. Because, I think we needed to submit by March of 2015, or was it April? And so we needed something by then. And we're recording, I think, in May 29th, 2015. So basically, Vasilis, he was focusing on the end credits and really making it good. Because Vasilis, you orchestrated everything. Am I correct?
Yes.
You wrote every single note for every single musician. I think there were like 30 musicians in the session.
Yeah.
30 musicians. Oh, just as a side note, by the way, they recorded in Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh.
Okay, so Vasilis is in Spain. He's in Barcelona. Now he's in Miami, but he was in Barcelona then.
Right.
I'm in L.A., and they're in Lisbon. I mean, for Vasilis, what, the time difference is 1 hour, I guess? So it wasn't that bad for you.
Wow.
And we decided to record right after lunch. lunchtime, their lunchtime, of course.
Yeah,
so that's like around 2 p.m. Because we thought by then they'll have freshened up, because they had a one-hour break, but at the same time, they had recorded some cues already for other projects, you know, because this is a Kickstarter thing.
So mm-hmm.
We're the only ones having our score recorded. So, you know, they, you know, have, I guess, the camaraderie, and they'll be able to, you know, they're more efficient than, let's say, if we recorded at the very beginning of the morning, where, you know, they needed some time to freshen up and, you know,
wake up.
It wouldn't have sounded, and it wouldn't have sounded like it was in sync. I don't know. But we did it after lunch. Now, their lunchtime is 2 p.m. Unfortunately, for me, that meant it was 6 a.m. So I woke up at 4 a.m. Luckily, there is a local Starbucks. Maybe it's a parallel Starbucks. No, but they were open at that time. So I went there, showered, then I went there, got my coffee, was all prepped, and of course, the session did not start until 1 hour later. That's okay, because I was there, and I was messaging Vasilis and Andre, who's a great guy, and, 1 hour actually isn't too bad at all. You know, the fact is he's handling 30 musicians, and I was impressed with this guy, with Andre. So we were just, you know, messaging each other on Facebook. You're talking about Facebook, so there you go. You know, we were using Facebook to communicate. And then I was watching it when I was sipping my Starbucks latte. I was watching them record, and it was, I think, a one-hour session. That's what we paid for. So that 1 hour, I was recording, on like a Ustream.
Mm-hmm.
So I was watching it live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Vasilis and I decided that Vasilis would be the one who'd be communicating with Andre, the coordinator, the contractor.
Right.
Who would then relay his message to the orchestra, rather than myself talking to Andre. Because I was, you know, I'm just the director. He's the composer. So he's the one who will know if there is a note that needs to be tweaked or whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. So Vasilis was the one that we decided to be communicating one-on-one with them, and I would just be a bystander and just watch.
Wow, that's fascinating. I've never heard of any kind of project done that way.
No, it's the first time for me, and it's very 2015. I don't think you could have done this 20 years ago.
What about Vasilis? Have you ever used choirs in any of your compositions?
No, unfortunately not. I would love to, but not. I mean, I use some of the libraries, but not a real choir.
Well, I volunteer my choir, so.
I'll volunteer too. My, I'm totally deaf, but you know, maybe.
I just thought it would be kind of a cool project to work on. So, you know, if you guys need future choir thing, so.
No, Julie, I love choirs. I would love to be able to use a choir. But so it's just hint.
Yeah.
Would love to be able to use a choir in a future film. No, I think if it necessitates a choir, yes, definitely, I would love to use it.
Well, there you go.
For me, the human voice is the best instrument there is.
So you mentioned Kickstarter for the orchestra. Can you, Russell, tell me a little bit about your Indiegogo project to get the movie started?
Yes, yep. We use Indiegogo to quote-unquote Kickstarter project. Pardon the pun. No, we use Indiegogo to raise the funds for this film, and it was my first time to do crowdfunding. I've never done this before. And with a film like what we have, we could do it for a lesser budget, so I thought it was more feasible to be able to raise the money. Now, I was kind of like a door-to-door salesman, and I profusely apologize to all my neighbors for listening to this program. I really do. And I thank you for helping me out. But it took over 119 people who donated to make this film possible. So you have my profound thanks. You really do. But yeah, what we did was we started the Indiegogo campaign, I think in June. We had to record a video. If you go to my to the Occupants website, that's occupantsthemovie.com, you will see the Indiegogo video with me in it. It's me, not my parallel film.
Oh, okay.
And I introduced the project. Yeah, I mean, I basically say, look, I've done, you know, three feature films before. I worked with actors like John Hurd and Robert Picardo, who's in this film. I worked with them, this would be my fifth time working with them. And I know what I can do, and so does my producer, Howard Mash. He's, you know, basically, because of him, I've done all these features. So, you know, I introduced the project, and, we put the video together. This was in June. And then that was our official, I guess, promo that you need. You need something like that when you have a campaign. And, you know, of course, we highlighted the fact that Picardo will be in the film. And I think that attracted a lot of people. And it took like 2 to 3 months. What did we do? I think we did like 60 days. So 60 days.
Wow, that's not much time.
Yeah, it's not much, but, you know, when we started, we did not know if we could raise the money. We really didn't. It's just, you have to work 24/7 at this. It's a whole other animal to raise the money itself. We publicized it on sites like TrekToday.com, which is a Star Trek site, about this campaign, and we got the word out there. And luckily, we raised 106% of our goal.
Wow!
And we got the money. Now, we were shooting in September, and it turns out that Indiegogo released the funds 1 week before we started shooting.
Oh.
It was kind of a time crunch.
Jeez.
But yeah, that's how it works with Indiegogo. Is the campaign ended like 2 weeks before, but it took them a little time to actually release the money. And of course, we called them. And we were like, telling them, look, we're about to shoot. We need the money because in pre-production, you need to start buying
stuff.
Items,
yes.
Like water, or food for the crew, or props for the film. Well, we need the money, right?
Right.
Where are we going to get the money? Where are we going to have the salary to actually pay, our cast and crew? Well, so we were like begging them, please release the funds. Please release the funds. And they did, luckily. So, and I will admit, I still play Legos, even at my age.
Yes.
It's like a piece of a puzzle, And I think that the Indiegogo campaign is one piece of that puzzle that is necessary to actually make the whole product, which is the Occupants, the feature film. And by the way, what we're doing today, and thank you again, Julie, because this is part of that puzzle too.
Right. Yes.
And this is not even, and the film is not done, but let's see, if the film was done, it would still be part of that puzzle because publicity is necessary to get the word out there.
Don't you think it's easier now to get the word out with social media?
It's much easier. Oh, it's amazing.
Yes.
It's amazing. Look, I found you through our mutual friend, Alan Clover.
Yes.
And he contacted me through social media.
Exactly.
Say, look, I'm a voice actor, and if there's a role in your film, I would love to audition for it. And guess what? There was a role, and he did a wonderful job as the weatherman. Now, he was the one who suggested you. And then we talked through Facebook. And
yes.
Voila, here we are today. So I'm telling you, this social media, this technology is amazing. I love it. I just love this technology. I love living in the year 2050. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have to start somewhere. So Well, I'll start aging myself, and Phyllis, you may know this company, but I started doing all this during the MySpace era.
The high of MySpace or the low of MySpace?
No, it's high. I love MySpace. MySpace, I was able to, you know, get the word out there on my short film called Girl with Gun. Girl with Gun is the reason why I'm making feature films today.
Oh.
Girl with Gun, by the way, it got into a lot of festivals, it won awards, and it got into the San Diego Comic-Con, which are, I think, the highlights of my life is one of the highlights. San Diego Comic-Con is the premier Comic-Con. And we went there not as people, you know, just somebody who bought a ticket, right? We went there as invitees. We got a panel. And it was an amazing experience. And myself, the actresses, the editor, his name is Emil Harris, who's also the director of photography and the editor on this film. And it was just an incredible experience. So, yeah, you know, even starting from there, I was using MySpace. This is back 10 years ago.
Right.
To promote my work. And it was because of that that I was able to find my producer, Howard Nash, and I was able to raise the money through a wonderful person out of Tennessee. And we were able to make my first feature film, PJ, which I love. I love PJ. And I did that before my 30th birthday. That was one of my goals in life, was to direct a feature before 30. And I'm very grateful that I was able to accomplish that. But because of that, because of Girl with Gun, because of MySpace, you know, because of social media, which has, of course, evolved.
Right.
You know, up to the present day. And I'm very sure it'll keep evolving. So who knows what we'll have in 2025. I don't know. I mean, I could not have foreseen the smartphone. I really couldn't. Smartphone is incredible. You know, you can even talk to people visually now on your phone. You could not have done that, let's say, 20 years ago. That was science fiction. Well, I'll tell you this. People are shooting films with their iPhone 6 now.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those.
You can even do that. You can do anything. These aren't phones. These are computers. It's kind of like the tricorder on Star Trek. You know, it's just a multitasking device. I mean, it's incredible.
Beam me up, Scotty.
There's no way I could have foreseen that. Right? I wish. That's 2025. That's when you could have teleportation.
Well, maybe we don't really need to be there, though. That's the secret. We don't need to teleport. We don't really need to be there. We can connect without being there. Well, I mean, talking about pulling all the pieces together, what are your plans for distribution?
Well, what we're going to do is, and we're starting right now, is we're trying to get the word out there. We went to two comic book conventions already, the Comic and Media Expo in Mesa, Arizona, and the Cleveland Comic Con in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yay!
And, yay, Cleveland! And I read one in Mesa because I'm in LA, and Howard Nash repped the one in Cleveland because he's in New York. But anyway, we're getting the word out there. We have 90 minutes of behind the scenes materials also, which includes featurettes on what Phyllis did.
Wow.
On the music aspect of it. So you get to see a lot of that stuff. But all this is in behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So we prep that stuff. We do a trailer. We did a teaser trailer. We go to conventions. We try to do interviews with wonderful people like yourself. Again, thank you.
You're welcome.
And now we also got our trailer into the LA Cinefest. I found that last night. And it's kind of it's a film festival. But there are festivals that are specifically for trailers, and that's what we're targeting right now.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get the word out there.
Right.
And it's all part of the plan, and now we're doing a graphic novel plan. We're going to be working with a writer who works for Marvel and DC Comics. So, and we're going to again go to the anime convention, TayoCon, in January. So all of that is just in preparation for the actual release of the film. Now, I guess step two would then be to actually get the film into film festivals, and we're going to target, you know, the really good ones. And knock on wood, I hope we can get in. And if we get in, and let's say knock on wood again, we actually get a nomination, and knock on wood again, we actually win. well, it just brings up the value of the film. So when we try to actually sell it, then people will be like, wow, you know, you got a, this festival, you won this award, and you have this actor, you have this wonderful score, right, that's Zillis, it really is, I feel this. And you have these, you know, great actors like Brianna White and Michael Pliassi and Robert DiPardo. I love the cinematographer. It basically, you know, we just try to bring up the value of the film in whatever way we can, so we get the best distribution deal possible. And all this, by the way, is also so that we can plan our next film. You know, we're always thinking about the next project, right?
Right.
And I can't say much about the next film, except that it's a sci-fi action thriller. And trust me, there is something that is happening. So just,
well, of course, there better be something happening.
Again, I'm very fascinated by this process. This is one reason I make films, because it's like I bring back the Legos analogy. Every piece is necessary to make that castle or the city or whatever you like to build.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally love the castles and whatnot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that you made castles. I always made houses.
So,
yes.
I used to play with a company called Micro Machines, and you were able to connect the pieces together and build a whole cityscape. And I just thought that was fascinating. So, you know, all this is part of that. Every piece, every Lego piece, every puzzle piece, whatever you want to call it.
Every Tinker Toy. I grew up with Tinker Toys. I'm giving my age.
Well, I will look up Tinker Toys.
Yes. Yes.
Incredible. You know, what I did with Vasilis, the fact that we worked, you know, across the seas, you know, where was it 500 years ago, Christopher Columbus, it would have taken him, was it several months? We can just do this instantaneously now. I mean, it truly is a new. And it just even to do the score, to write all those notes, Vasilis, and to get all the musicians and make sure each one had a good night's rest, and, you know, to make sure your instruments are, you know, prepped for the session. It's just all these elements are necessary to bring, you know, what we call the film Occupants, you know, an 81-minute feature film called Occupants to completion, to fruition. It's just amazing that it just takes all these elements.
Well, I'm sure along the journey, you guys have overcame multiple obstacles. But I would like to ask Vasilis, was there a major obstacle that you had to overcome in your life to get where you are now?
I don't know what to tell. I want to be too personal, but I lost my mother. So that was the biggest thing I had to look up in my life.
Yeah, I mean, things like that do affect us in many ways. I can see that. And, you know, you can never get too personal, because those things affect who you are and how you do things now. What about you, Russell?
Well, when I was growing up, I had a health condition, which I still have. But it's called atopic dermatitis. It affects the skin. It's eczema. It's a form of allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was growing up, it was really bad. It was really, really bad. But because of that, it made me internalize and made me think more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I take that to the present day, where I like to think. I like to say, maybe play devil's advocate. Okay, you know, what if we do this? Oh, but how about this? Like that. And I like to internalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that with me into my films, into the present day. I also grew up in both Japan and the United States. So I think I have a more international view of the world. I went to an international school called the Canadian Academy in Japan. And I met people from all over the world who I'm still in touch with today.
Wow.
So it definitely affected me. health or just my upbringing. And I love working with people like Vasilis, you know, who's from Greece, lived in Spain, now Miami. And just to get that international perspective on life, I think it's just fascinating, you know, the mindset. I guess this is truly an international world. So maybe that's my upbringing. You know, it definitely affected me. And I use that in every one of my films.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody has different stories growing up and different things that have happened to them. And good or bad, those things shape who we are today. And it's kind of like that building block. You know, you take out one element of your past and you would be a different person if it wasn't for that one element.
I know. I mean, for even in this interview, you know, we talked to a witch.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I went off and got some tea and I came back and I don't know. It's very strange.
It must be the Halloween. That's
what it is. Well, of course. But, you know, there's certain people that live in Halloween, you know, no matter what day or month it is. They just kind of hide it.
But seriously, our past does affect our present and our future. Definitely. I use what I learned in my past, my own experiences. And I use it in myself.
Well, let's start wrapping things up here. I've just been fascinated by the whole process of how, you know, a movie is put together and how the music is composed. Tell me how to connect with you guys. So I know people out there are going to want to see the projects that you have worked on in the past and want to follow and see what you're going to be doing in the future. Vasilis, why don't you start?
For me, it's really easy. I mean, you can visit my website, it's vasilisminis.com, and you can see the project that I created so far. If you have any questions or some news that you have updated, you can see anything there.
And I will have links out, you know, on our website, NEO Community Radio, and through our social media as well, so we can connect everything. What about you, Russell?
Well, you can go to, for the movie itself, occupantsthemovie.com. And that's occupants, plural. And if you go there, you can see everything. And we have links to our Twitter, our Facebook, our YouTube accounts. You can see the trailer. You can see photos, you can see behind-the-scenes videos and whatnot. So, and it has a link to my own website, Russem Productions, which is www.russem.com, R-U-S-S-E-M.com. And you can see other work that I've done, including Girl with Gun, PJ Chasing the Green, The Legends of Messiah, Restoration of Paradise, and this current film.
Wow, I just love how, you know, once you meet somebody, you can stay connected with them with social media. Well, again, thank you guys so much. And I can't wait to hear about future projects. You never know, we might be able to work together on something. Hint, hint. That would be awesome.
What? I didn't hear that.
I said it would be awesome if we could work together. You know, I could say it like 10 times.
I heard it.
You know, and maybe I should like knock on wood when I say it. You know, I could like knock on wood. And but you know what? You brought up. You were talking about knocking on wood. I probably was. You were talking about knocking on wood earlier. I wonder if somebody would knock back if you would knock on wood.
There you go. Somebody just knocked back. My fellow
self. Yeah, exactly. So,
No, but definitely, I think it takes a collaboration. So, Julie, thank you, and we'd love to work with you in the future.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank Alan for hooking us all up, and thank you guys. Yeah.